Hey, beautiful people, and welcome to the Tell Me a Story podcast. I'm your host, Eric Bell. If this is your first time on the show, this is the kind of podcast where I have different people coming on and they tell me their favorite story. And buckle up, because these stories range. From the relatable to the intense to the traumatic, there is something for everyone here. And I know you guys will love these stories as much as I enjoyed hearing them myself. Today I have my friend Rihanna on the show, and she's blowing up on TikTok. Bina Ray underscore, huge Star Wars nerd, so we talk about that for a little bit. But the story she gives me is about just a badass teacher she had. And honestly, I know we've all had like an educator that just really made us think differently and put us on a path that we normally wouldn't have been on. So this is her story about Miss Mullins, an incredible educator, incredible teacher, and I wish there was more like you. And the ones that are like you should get way more credit than you guys already do. So please enjoy. Alrighty. Rihanna, thank you for coming to the show.
I'm glad to be here.
Yeah. I was on TikTok and I was just kind of, you know, you popped up on my For You page and I like, it's weird when you start binge, it's like, I'm used to binge watching TV shows, but with TikTok, I end up binge watching someone's whole history of videos. And I was like, oh, this is funny. Oh, that's cool. Oh, that's cool. Wait, how much have I watched in this short span of time? Love your cosplay. Love your commentary. I was just regaled on your Star Wars love. I noticed you got some. Are you cool? So you're down for the sequels?
That's such a complicated question because
I don't mean in the sense of you think there. I'm not asking you think there are some of the greatest films in the Star Wars genre, but there seems to be three camps of the sequels are trash. They you know just generally just don't like them. With mild parts of saying, oh, that was cool. Or people who were like more on the defense side and saying, well, the movie's fine, or they have more things that they enjoy. And then there's the third toxicity, you know, which is all the ugly
that's terrible. I feel like my position is I will defend those characters with my life. The plot seems much to be desired. Yeah, but yeah, and I'm always there to like kind of speak for the people who enjoy things and the people who are like toxic. Like, I'm going to call them out on it. Like, it's not that serious. Like, that, I feel like that's where my position is. Like, I'm not going to let you be toxic about something that's fictional. Like, that's
ridiculous. Of course. Yeah, then it's just an excuse to show their ugly side of their being.
Yeah.
But like one thing I was talking about it with my brother and we were talking about comic books and anime and all that jazz. And we were like, but we feel that the community, every group has a toxicity element to it. Everyone has the horrible people within their group. And when we were talking about nerddom, we were like, we believe that Star Wars has perhaps the most toxic fan base amongst the other genres when people can get ridiculous about some change in anime or some change in a comic book, you know, the vile really shines in Star Wars.
I feel like it's because Star Wars is such a large fandom because it's existed for so long and that there is so much content to consume, whether it be video games or like comic books or Legends, the EU, and then like now all the canon content. So like you can have very different types of fans. Like I'm on a podcast like called Sisters with Sabers, and it's all Black women who love Star Wars. And there's like a cast of like, I think there's 9 of us that rotate on it, and we're all different levels of fans. We all came at it from a different direction, and the one thing that we share is that we will not be toxic towards each other, no matter how different all of our opinions are, or why we enjoy the fandom, or like what level of fan. Like, we have one of our members of the podcast, she only has watched the new movies. She has not watched any of the old movies or any of the animated movies. And we're, I'm associating
with this woman. Hold on.
I she's amazing. She's great. And she has her opinions of the movies, and that's fine, even though she doesn't watch the sequel trilogy. And we're not going to be toxic towards her because she's a Star Wars fan. Whether she's watched all the other stuff or not, she enjoys it. That's where she came in through it. And I really, I really enjoy that about the podcast, that we don't allow like that gatekeeping nonsense to go on, because it's kind of ridiculous. Like, yeah, I'm like, how can you watch the other? We're like, we don't appease her.
Oh yeah, all joking. You can't be serious on it.
Definitely.
But you gotta razzle a little bit.
Yeah, just a little bit. I don't get like the vitriol, especially of like Star Wars YouTube, which is, oh my gosh, scary. Star Wars TikTok is a little bit better though, I will say. That's why I think I like it better.
Yeah, the communities and the TikTok, the communities that have developed in the TikToks have been. I'm on the D&D, and it's the love and the general. Like, I'm seeing a lot of cool people, and of course, I just don't factor them into my mind in my day when the more bio dumbass commenters. I'm like, okay, you don't exist. Out of my head. I don't give a shit about you. But There's such an overwhelming, like, awesome interaction amongst the comments section. And I definitely, like, at least I've seen that more so than, like, fucking Facebook, Instagram, or YouTube. YouTube comment section is, whoa.
Oh, yeah. Scary place. I think, TikTok is, like, a great place to find your niche, like, because the way the algorithm is set up. So, if you go over, like, to someone else's For You page, it looks completely different. So I feel like the toxic fans stay in their own little corner because that's their algorithm.
Yeah. And every so often, one of them will just slide in because they use the correct hashtags and they're new enough. But well, it's a solid spot. But anyway, this is Tell Me a Story. Did you have a specific story you wanted to tell me?
You know, I thought for like what story should I tell? Because I'm always telling stories. And I went around and I was like asking everyone I know, I'm like, what is the favorite story I've ever told you? And like everyone gave me such wildly different answers, except for like one of my closest friends. And she said, she was like, why don't you tell your story? And I'm like, what does that mean? And then she's like, you'll know what I mean when you figure it out.
That's a shitty friend. No.
She's very like hippy dippy and like out there, and I'm like very find yourself. And I was like, I don't know what that's supposed to mean, but she always gives me like these seeds of advice, like when like Obi-Wan gives a quote, and then like years later you figure it out. That's kind
and
of
then like, all of a sudden the moment happens, and you hear the voice and the echo, like, oh, this is the moment. I think 3 years later, bro, but.
Yeah, gladly it didn't happen 3 days later. It happened. I was cleaning my room and I found this letter that I wrote in the third grade to my third grade teacher thanking her. And I was like, oh, this is what she meant. This is what my friend meant. So this may be a little bit meta for a podcast about storytelling, but I was like, I'll tell the story about how I became a storyteller. I think that's the story I will tell.
Awesome. Well, tell me a story.
All right. So I guess it started out when I was 3. I'm joking. Not that far back. But I come from a really big, really big family full of a whole bunch of characters that are like larger than life. And when I was little, I was super quiet. Most of the time you could see me in a corner all by myself in like old pictures and videos, like with my teddy bear or a book. And I would not speak. Actually in kindergarten and in first grade, they tried to hold me back because I wouldn't speak in class and I was struggling with my grades in school. And my parents were like, that doesn't make sense. She's like reading at a third grade level in the first grade. Like, I don't understand how she's going to stay back. It doesn't make sense. And it's all because like I wouldn't speak. I wouldn't communicate with other people. There's lots of reasons for why that was, but mainly just because I always felt like overshadowed by all these different characters in my life. And I was just more happy with observing other people. And I never really saw that as a character flaw. And but then my parents forced them. They're like, no, she's not staying back in the first grade. She's moving on to the second grade. And one of the second grader teachers, I will never forget her. I still talk to her to this day. Miss Waltrina Kirkland Mullins. She was the first Black teacher I ever had. She's just like this spark of joy. She's like this wide, broad-shouldered Black woman with her natural hair. And she had those like conch shells from like West Africa in her ears all the time. She always had these beautiful African woven shawls that she would wear over her outfit with these long skirts. And I love this woman. She's a spectacular woman. And she was one of the most eccentric people I have ever met. And she just absolutely pulled me out of my shell. Like, I was never good at math or science like my siblings were. They excelled at that. Like, they were amazing brains. Like, but you know what? I could sit and tell you the whole plot of a movie or a book, like, verbatim to you. And this woman picked up on that, like, so quickly. Like, during that age, I was getting bullied a lot. Like, I was receiving a lot of, I was different. I was weird. I had glasses and I was skinny and I didn't talk. And when I did talk, I would ramble and talk about things people didn't care about, like Star Wars. I've been a Star Wars fan since I was itty bitty. And, you know, second graders are looking at me like, what are you talking about? Like, you know, I'd go over to girls talking about Star Wars and, you know, they're like, what? Question mark? What is that? And boys be like, girls can't like Star Wars. So I was just always in this weird out of place spot. So I would never go to recess. Like, I'd find every other location to be in other than the playground. I would stay in the cafeteria or I would find some excuse to go to the nurse. And she noticed this and she's like, you're not doing that anymore. You're going to spend recess with me instead because you're not going to be wandering around the school as a third grader, you know, because you don't want to go to recess for whatever reason. And she was like, what do you want to be as a grow up, as when you grow up? Which I always hated that question when I was growing up. So I'm like, I'm 7. I don't know. Where everyone else had an answer. And I'm like, I don't have an answer. I don't know what I want to do. And she just kind of put this paper in front of me. And she was like, have you ever heard of poetry? And I'm like, Miss Mullins, of course I've heard of poetry. Like, if you think I'm stupid or something. But she's like, write me a poem about something you care about. And I believe the poem I wrote about, if I remember correctly, was about my older brother, but it was less of a poem and more of a story. And I don't know why she looked at this. She's like, this is really good. And my parents are loving and doting and all those things. And they think I'm amazing, I guess. My dad always, when he raised me, he always calls all of his daughter princesses and all of his sons princes. And that's how he sort of raised us. But when it came to school, it was more like we never got like compliments on things like that. Because when we got A's, that's what we were supposed to do. That was what was expected. So this one offhand comment about that this is really good, even though I didn't follow the instructions, she asked me to write a poem and I ended up writing a story instead. She looked at me like, this is really good. And she's like, I'm gonna make a copy of this and put it on my wall. And that moment was so encouraging. And I would, instead of going to recess, I would go to this woman And I would write, and I would write, and I would write. And this just love of writing bloomed in me. And I would just write all the time, constantly. And that was just like my one thing that it always kept on going back to, that I was able to communicate these things in my head, these things that I had been observing for years, because I would just be sitting in the corner quietly, seeing all these stories play out in front of me. And I just, being able to write them and tell them was a way to like put myself in that narrative. And I really appreciate that. And going back and finding that now, in all these different avenues. And because, you know, growing up, like you, I feel like sometimes you lose the things that made you you as a kid, you know? Mm-hmm. And I feel like growing up is losing that and then finding that again. Like growing up is just becoming a kid again without all the shame. And and because like, and I, when I like lost that like thread a little bit with writing, because like my junior year of high school came around, my senior year of high school came around, and you know what? The only thing I've ever felt that I was naturally good at was writing and telling stories. Because eventually when I started breaking out of my shell, because writing helped me do that, like I would write, I started writing plays, and I started performing those little plays because I could never get anyone else to do it for me. I couldn't find any actors. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna be the actor now. I'm gonna act out my own plays. I got into slam poetry, and I would do that in middle school and things like that. And I fell in love with history, because history is just stories that happened. And it just helped me break out of my shell. But then junior year and senior year, I felt like that was the only thing I was good at. But it's like being a storyteller, like whether it's writing or acting or being a screenwriter, those jobs aren't like lucrative necessarily.
You're so sweet by the way you said it.
Huh?
You said it in such a nice way.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you know, gotta try not to, you know, be like some people in my life who are like, what do you want to be, broke or something? You know, like you want to be a starving artist? Like, I don't want to ever, I feel like we have to be realistic about the goals we set in our life, mm-hmm. but you don't have to be needlessly cruel to people pursuing their dreams, I feel like. Because artists all the time, they're like, this is the thing that brings me joy. And I would like that that thing that brings me joy to also put a roof over my head, you know? And then these people come out of the woodwork. Sometimes people that are the closest people to you and the people that are supposed to care about you just look you in the face and tell you you're stupid in every other way than like for wanting to do the thing that brings you joy in our short little lifespans on this earth. Like that, I never want to do that. I do think you have to be realistic. Like, yes, this, if I pursue this, it will be a struggle. Yeah. So like when I was there, I was like, I don't know if I am willing to struggle for that, because I look at my parents are both Jamaican immigrants, and they have been through so much in their lifetime. They struggled so much just to give me a good life. And when I was in that point, that juncture at my junior year and senior year, I felt like I would be throwing away that sacrifice that they made for me if I went and pursued writing or anything like that. So I was like, okay, let's find a career that I can do that will put a roof over my head and make my parents not worry about me. And I decided to pursue nursing, which...
there was a lot of emotions in that,
like people who knew me, like everyone looked at me very strangely when I'm like, I'm gonna be a nurse, and no one was like discouraging it, because they're like, nursing is a good job, like I can't tell you like it's a bad job, but they're like, really?
Oh, no, that's telling.
Yeah, like, I am not, I don't like hospitals. Like, I mean, I've kind of, because I was klutz when I was growing up. That was part of the reason I was bullied all the time. I was so clumsy. I would trip over myself all the time because my limbs were too long for my little body. and, yeah, and so I was always getting in the hospital. So I just developed, like, a deep hatred for hospitals, but I kind of grew out of that. But still, something that people knew about me, that I'm like, I try to avoid hospitals as much as I can, and things like that. And I'm also something of a loner a bit, so nursing didn't seem very odd.
Yeah, it seems like an odd choice of a career.
Yeah, but you know, I'm someone who I care a lot about people. I view myself as a caretaker kind of instinct always. I'm the mom friend of my group, so I'm always someone who's like wanting to take care of people. So I felt like it wasn't for me. I was like, it's not too far out of the ballpark, like, you know, like. And I went and visited my old elementary school because I tutored there occasionally and sometimes. And I went back to Miss Mullins and she was like, you're graduating soon, right? And I'm like, yeah. And she was like, well, what's your major going to be? And I was like, I said, I'm going to do nursing. And she kind of just gave me a look, like this knowing look, because she just always has that knowing about her. And she just looked at me. She was like, okay. There was no judgment there, like with other people. She just said, okay, you'd be amazing in anything you put your mind to. And but that look just haunted me forever. And that first year of college, I was the worst year of my life. It really was. Like, I was so depressed. And I wasn't writing at all. I was not writing at all. I was taking math classes and biology and chemistry. And those have never been my strong suit, ever. Like, never. And I was really struggling. And it was like hard to even get out of bed in the morning. And then I was like, my second semester of that first year, I was in a math class. I don't even remember what the math class was. And the numbers were just swarming across the board. And I was like, I don't know what I'm doing here. And literally in that class right away, immediately, I opened up my laptop, went onto the school's website, and I changed my major right there in the middle of class. And I just got up and left. And before I left, the teacher's like, where are you going in the middle of class? And then I don't even know. I just looked at this teacher and I smiled and I left the classroom. And I remember that day so much because I'm like, I only got so much time on this little blue ball, running around, floating around, and it's ridiculous that I'm going to pursue a career I have no interest in. It's clearly taking a toll on my sanity because I was meant to tell stories, and I know this about myself. And I've always known this about myself. And you just kind of forget, you know? Like, mm-hmm. The things that... Because as a kid, you don't question the things that make you happy. You just do them. Mm-hmm. And then as you get older, people get in your head and they ask you, why does this make you happy? Or tell you something shouldn't make you happy. Mm-hmm. Even if it does. And I'm so glad that I've gone back to telling stories. And I went back to Miss Mullins once again afterwards, and I was like, I changed my major. And she's like, oh, what's your major now? I'm like, I'm an English major. I hope to pursue English education and secondary education. And she just smiled. She's like, you're a teacher and a writer, and I don't know why what that nursing thing was about, but I'm glad you figured it out. Because she was just like, yeah, I don't know what that was about, but I'm glad you figured it out for yourself. And it was really funny because she was not the only English teacher that I had over the course of my years. I'm the kind of person who, like, if I make a connection with you, like, even if I don't talk to you for years, like, I still keep you in my mind, and I still, like, occasionally will reach out to you. And all my English teachers were just like, yeah, we were questioning that. I always thought you would be a teacher, like, or a writer or something along those lines. And it's funny how some people can see you better than you can see yourself.
That bird's eye view, you know?
Yeah. I also think that's the power of stories as well. You can see things clearer from an outside perspective. And it sometimes clears the dust for yourself as well. Because we can kind of get myopic in our view of ourselves. But when you're looking at a story, you can see the beginning, middle, and the end. When you're looking at yourself, you can't always see the end. So you're kind of lost in the sauce. And you don't know what part of the story you're in. You might be at the beginning, you might be in the middle, and you have no idea. Yeah, so that is the story about how I became a storyteller. This year especially has been amazing for my storytelling because I have nothing else to do.
Yep, you kind of make that next great American novel. Best, you know, it's definitely got some free time on your hands, but that is a phenomenal story, by the way.
Thank you.
Miss Mullins, right?
That was Miss Mullins.
That is one badass teacher.
She's awesome. I can tell you a million stories about this woman. She is such a character.
You know, I always find it fascinating how, like, when people are actively pursuing their passion, they almost always have that one teacher, that one, you know, educator that, you know, really, you know, made them think about the way life differently, made them think about themselves differently, and, like, put them in a certain pathway. And, like, I truly, truly have always appreciated that those, my dad's a teacher, my, you know, I remember when I was in high school, it was very, like, when you were telling your story, like, I had my own few flashbacks. Because I was also, I was very nerdy growing up, you know, so picked on constantly. 100% bullied, shortest black kid in a black school. It was, and I watched Dragon Ball Z. So it was just like, it was, I had made my, that was the path. So, you know, again, great parents. And it wasn't until I got to high school and I decided to say, ah, fuck it, I'll go for the play. I'll audition for the play. And the theater teacher, Douglas Griffin, first time any educator ever told me I was good at something. You know, like this, like they say, oh, you have a natural talent. And, you know, went on just having that kind of more confidence in life and found my way into stand-up comedy. And, you know, so it warmed my heart knowing that, you know, there's other great educators out there who, you know, can really help. You know, that's the beauty of educators. They can sometimes really help new generation shine.
Absolutely. And
truly appreciate that. Can never fucking do it. Never fucking do it. I am educated to, like, I got a degree in comparative world literature for fucking reasons. And I even went and got myself a substitute teaching license. And I'm like, I do not want to fucking teach. I'm never going to teach. This is way out of my comfort zone. So I always appreciate those who have a passion for it and go for it full kilt.
Yeah, I think that's so, there's so many teachers I've had where I'm like, you have no business being a teacher, but they heard, you know, you're gonna get summers off and you get like nearly every holiday off. And some teachers love a power trip. I don't know if you've had teachers who just like, I lowered over this class of literal children, look how much power I have. And it's so bizarre. And no business being a teacher whatsoever. They just did it because it was easy. And I think it's more important to, again, to understand what you are suited for in this life. And to actually fulfill that purpose. Because if you're holding a position you have no business holding, you're being more of a hurt than a help to yourself and to others. Like the damage that has been done by teachers, that part of the reason why I lost my direction on my path to becoming a storyteller are exactly because of teachers like who had no business being teachers whatsoever. The first time someone told me that my writing was terrible, like people have been indifferent to my writing and people have been very complimentary towards it. But the first time someone has ever been hurtful was my freshman year of high school. My English teacher was just, she hated my writing. She hated it. And you could tell my grades were like, this first time I ever gotten like a C in an English class. Like, oof. And I was like, what am I doing wrong? And I'm like, there's nothing wrong with my writing. She just doesn't like it. And she could not grade objectively the fact that I was completing the assignments that she asked for. She just did not like my style of writing whatsoever. Oof. To the point where sometimes I would go to my best friend. I'm like, can you write this assignment for me? Because you just cannot stand the way. And that really damaged a lot of my self-esteem. Like, and then the next year when it was time to go to AP classes, like I was not recommended to go to AP English, which was like, and English has always been something that I've been great at. And it was just mind boggling. My parents had to come into the school and fight. They're like, my daughter's English has always been her strongest subject. I don't understand why she's not being put in AP English. And they fought for that. And they did let me into AP English because I talked to the AP English teacher. And then she was like, you can be in this class. Like, it's not that you, I don't know what the issue with the other teacher is. And I was one of those kids in high school who would eat lunch with teachers. You know, I'm just, I when I say I was like, I was really nerdy, like I really was. Like, yeah, so like me and my friends would eat lunch with the English teachers. And all the other English teachers loved me, except for this one English teacher. I'm like, I'm not naming names because, you know, she knows who she is. But Mrs. Nargi, she was the AP teacher, and she was grading papers one day at lunch, and then she was just like, she like slammed the pen on the desk, and she was like, Mrs. Bennett, I have a bone to pick with you. And I was like, I don't know what I did. I'm just eating this turkey sandwich. Yes, Miss Nargi. She was like, how are you so good? And I'm like, what? What are you talking about? She's like, how are you so good at writing? I'm so confused. And then she looked to Miss Kinsman. She's like, Miss Kinsman, you told me she couldn't write.
Ooh, shade. Oh, yeah. And
she looked at my freshman year teacher, and I was just like, that's interesting. Like, and just, and it was just so, I'm like, and not the fact that she just didn't like my writing, the fact that she went to tell other teachers that, to the point that I couldn't write. Like, the one thing that I had prided myself in being good at, this woman had looked me in the eye and told me that I wasn't good at it. Like, that was, like, so damaging to my self-esteem. You know, it's like, your freshman year of high school is, like, terrible. Like, it really is. It's like this new place, and you're like half an adult, but not.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and then this one teacher in the one class that usually brings me joy is just terrible and hates everything I do. Yeah. And like that really like made me question about like me pursuing writing. And honestly, that woman had no business being a teacher. Like, one of the first things she said in the first day of class, she's like, there are such thing as stupid questions. With
For a freshman high school class, you're going to tell that to kids, to babies? Jesus.
Yeah. Now looking back on it, you know, when you're that age, you're like, I'm not a kid. But like, when now looking back at it, I'm like, that's a child.
Child.
You know? That's a child. Like, you're telling, like, and she would straight up, like, if someone asked a question she would deem as stupid, she'd be like, that's stupid, and then not answer and move on. Yeah. Like, no business. And like, now going through school and, you know, studying to become an educator, my philosophy is like, there are no stupid questions. They're not. There's simply not. Like, there's so much knowledge in this world that not everyone has access to. And to tell someone that a question they have is stupid just because it's something that you've known for a really long time, like, you don't get to dictate when someone comes into knowledge.
That's very true. Let me ask you a question about that.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever worked customer service?
Yes.
Now, I will not ask you that question again. Do you believe that there is such a thing as a stupid question?
Okay.
All right. I just want to throw that out there.
So I work in tech support. That's how I get through school. And you do get some questions that are frustrating. But again, it's mind blowing the questions you get. They're very funny questions you get, but I try to always hold on to that when I get that instinct to think that someone else is stupid.
Yeah.
I'm like, I have to take into account that I grew up in the age of technology.
True.
My dad was in IT. Technology has been around me my whole life. That is how I've learned. And I've also went to school. Like a 6-month school certification program to learn how to do my job.
Yes.
So these things that seem obvious to me are not going to seem obvious to a 67-year-old woman or a 45-year-old man who lives mm-hmm. in the backwoods and has had a Nokia for the past 8 years.
Of course. But you know, those are not the customers I'm talking about.
I believe in radical empathy, and that is my philosophy, and I stand behind it. It's very easy to look at someone else and be like, you are dumb. It's very easy. You know what? And it's very easy to do that. And it's also very easy to ask the stupid question that if you thought about it for like 5 seconds, you would know you're being ridiculous.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And when
I am speaking from experience because some ignorant, stupid ass questions have come out of my mouth. So I do speak from experience. I'm like, did I just fucking say that out loud? Yeah. Don't look at me.
Yeah. And when someone calls customer service as well, something is going wrong mm-hmm. and they're frustrated. And when you're frustrated, you don't think with the right part of your brain. So you ask questions that if you were in the right frame of mind, you would not ask. And then there are some people because the way that they were raised or whatever environment they are in, they are never in the right frame of mind. And instead of hating my job and wanting to jump out of the 2-story window, I have to just accept that there are people out there who are never going to be in the right frame of mind. And we just have to gently push them into the correct frame. But I cannot do that over a 30-minute phone call or sometimes painfully an hour-plus phone call. I have to realize, I'm like, you know what? It is not my job or my place on earth to help this person in that way. My job is to do my job. And when you think someone is stupid, that comes into the way you interact with them, and people sense that, and it frustrates them even more, and then it makes mm-hmm. them more ignorant when they feel that energy. So you just got to keep that positive energy. Mm-hmm. It's very hard, and there are some assholes who know exactly what they're doing when they call customer service, and they know exactly what they're doing because they think they can get away with it because the customer is always right. Those people I don't like because I think everyone should have to work customer service once in their life.
100%. 100% is
because they would not act that way if they had to sit for 6+ hours on the phone with people who think they're entitled
mm-hmm.
to be terrible to you.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Yeah. Oh, well, that was a. Your empathy. Your empathy is so strong.
Huh?
Your power of empathy is so strong that you have actually, like, how you have had your definition of not a stupid question towards customer service, which I've worked customer service too, so I know these experiences you've had. I know. I know. So the fact that you can still find the love, it's like, God damn, that's a character right there. That is strong. I respect that. I respect that. I could never do it.
I respect the fact that you can't do it, because sometimes I have to give the phone away to someone in the office. I'm just like, I can't, it's about to break. Here's the phone. You deal with them.
Life always tests our moral fiber. It all happens.
And it's always worse because I'm also a woman. So,
for customer service many years, the shit that some fucked up customer will feel like they can get away with to the ladies who would never speak to me that way. It was always so fucking obvious. Like, well, bro, you talk to me a very specific way, but now that you're dealing with her, Jesus. So I got females working customer service. Oh my God. I feel for my wife every day. I was like,
oh my gosh.
If I could, if it wouldn't be wrong, I would love to just go to her job and beat the crap out of like a tenth of her clientele. But
oh my gosh, absolutely. Sometimes you have that, you know, yeah. One of the things, like when I was younger, that I had problems with was that I had anger issues. So I've worked through a lot of that.
Oh, you really worked through them.
Yeah. Like, you know. I sometimes still have a little bit of temper, but like I when I'm at work, I try to keep that in because like I don't know what that person's going through.
Yeah,
I don't know whatever is happening with them, you know. So,
oh yeah, and that's always you just gotta shrug it off, move along.
Yeah, my job would be much more terrible if I got angry all the time. It'll be so much worse if I didn't just laugh at these people and be like, "Oh, people, so funny."
I remember when I used to live in LA, the last job I had was our customer service at the airport at the LAX.
Oh, God.
And you at were LAX. There. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
If you, you would swear that it was my job to, I'm the one who fucked up TSA for you and your flight. And at the time, the last thing I did was I worked at the bookstore. So, oh my God, the privilege. And it was at the, I was at the international terminal. So it was so it was nothing but designer stores. You like the bougie of bougie, you know? Yeah. Like these are people who spend thousands and thousands of dollars so they can fly first class overseas, which is a fucking ridiculous amount of money. Mm. But, you know, the amount of shit. I was like, yeah, I ain't never fucking doing this again. I will murder someone if I continue to work customer service.
You know what? A fun game I like to play. Because you know how I said, like, with customer service, you don't know what that person's going through. I like to imagine a story for why they act like that. You know? Like, why are you like that? And I'm like, let me think of a story that may be plausible for why you're acting like this. And it's always fun. I don't know if you've ever done this, but like, look at, like, you're sitting in a public place and you're looking at someone, you're like, I think that person's married with 4 triplets or whatever.
My wife and I may have had a few date nights where we have decided to look at the next couple. I'm like, oh shit, you know what's going down over there, right? And you just improv what's going down. And yeah, many a times.
That's so fun. There's like, you know, it's like when you're like, it's just so fun to think about what other people are doing. Like, it's just also just a fun, like, you know, exercise and like that. Like, I don't know if like with little babies, like when like they, before they can talk, like giving them like narration. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know if that's just a me thing, but like when a baby. No. Okay, it's not.
I am a father, and I will 100% tell you that when you become a parent, you do that all the time.
Oh my God.
You're with a baby 24/7. You have, like, my son had very strong opinions about the quality of Cowboy Bebop. My son had every discussion about every Disney movie. I would have long debates like fake debates. Like, yeah, I know what you're just making my kid say things or agreeing with things. I always answer the question.
Yeah,
that his coos have stated. I definitely looked fucked up doing it, probably, because when you're a dad, you're never just at home. You're walking them through a CVS or wherever. But I decided this is how I'm going to conversate with my child. So I was that weird guy in the aisle.
Yeah, but you know what? I was reading about it, like that's actually really good for children socializing, because you know you're talking to them basically, and they're
Oh yeah, my son is 5 now, and he can. But here there's a curse to this. He will talk, he will talk your ear off. Don't mention you like anything that he likes, because
oh my gosh.
And now I feel bad. I feel bad because now he's 5 now, and I turned him on to Avatar: The Last Airbender.
Oh, that's good.
My poor wife has to hear all the things that a 5-year-old picks up from Avatar, and it doesn't end. It doesn't end. It's literally all day long. It's either that or Minecraft. So yes, talking to your infant will 100% increase their vernacular. They will be great speakers, and they'll have better communication skills on average. But they're going to be doing that to you like all day long. So just. Not saying not to do it, but saying you know what path you're on.
Yeah. I don't know if kids are on my life path, but I do love children. They're adorable. I have a niece and a nephew, and I love them to death.
I bet you're the awesome aunt. There's no way you're not the cool aunt.
You know what? You know, my other sister, she's giving me a run for my money, you know?
Oh. You gotta step it up. Get them a PS5. You know,
I want a PS5. Let's try. Let me afford a PS5 before I get my niece and my nephew one. Goodness gracious! And my niece, when she's obsessed with Minecraft as well, just all she plays. Like she's that's it. Like she does not play anything else. It's like I'm like, you want to play this? And she's like, no. Well, she actually got into Among Us. She likes Among Us. So.
Okay.
Yeah, but you could talk about that forever. But I'm a cool aunt in that regard, because I'm the only aunt that knows what Among Us is, and I could play with her. So I'm a cool aunt.
That's cool. Well, Rihanna, we have been talking for 45 minutes. Thank you so much for this incredible story. But I want people to find you. I want people to subscribe and do all the things, because you're a great content creator. So how's best for people to find you?
Oh, find me. Well, on TikTok, I'm BinaRay_. That's B-I-N-A Ray, as in Ray from Star Wars. I'm predictable like that.
really leaned into the Star Wars, didn't you?
Yeah. That name was sort of like thrust onto me, and I just accepted it. And then it's the same thing for Twitter, BinaRay_.
You say you have a podcast, right?
I do have a podcast, and it's called Sisters with Sabers. It's on Spotify, and I'm not the main host. Maria is the host of the podcast. But we are on, we're on Twitter as well. As @SabersWith is our @ on Twitter. And then from there, you can find all of us. We're all attached to that account. And then you can find us. The link is in the Twitter bio. And it's a great time. It's not for children. I will say that. Be careful. It's not for children. that's the pod. And I have a lot of other things planned coming up, too. They'll probably be on my Twitter and I'll probably post on my TikTok as well about it.
Right on. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's Tell Me a Story. Thank y'all. Good night. And that's the show. Thank you so much for listening. I look forward to giving you guys more stories, more guests. You guys keep on listening. Our numbers are growing every week.
And it's thanks to you guys. So please continue to like, share, subscribe. If you want to support other ways, you can follow me on Instagram or Facebook. My handle is Bell Comedy. That's also my Cash App handle, $BellComedy, one word, if you want to support other ways. We will have a Patreon up that'll be a little bit easier for you guys to directly donate. And thank you for listening to Tell Me a Story. Love y'all. Bye.